This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everyone. This is Basma Farhead of the People Speak Radio. Here we believe when the people speak, they make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak Live on BBS Radio every Tuesday night at 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time or by going to our website at www.thepeoplespeakradio.net. There you can also listen to our shows or our past shows on our iPod Ready archive section. That's thepeoplespeakradio.net. Now, if you have a Nokia phone, you can also listen live via satellite. Just go to the website for details. It's my pleasure tonight to introduce an old and dear friend and a social activist and peace activist here in the Michigan, the metropolitan Michigan area, Hassan Nawash. Hassan is the founder and director of the Palestine Office of Michigan. The office works towards an end to the Israeli occupation and promotes greater awareness and understanding of issues concerning Palestinian rights here and abroad. The grassroots program has arisen from a need to demand direct action, and this is what the Palestine office works towards, with many other national organizations to procure the civil and human rights of the people of Palestine. Hassan, hi. It's good to have you with us, and it's good to talk to you, old buddy.
Pleasure to be with you, partnering again. That's wonderful. Let's make a contribution.
It has been a long time. I'm working on it. My time has been limited lately, but I really have been following everything that you've been doing.
Hey, I don't have to push you.
I know that.
Wonderful. I'm glad that you're making this contribution.
You've been doing some great work. You've been doing some great work in the area, especially with what's been happening in Gaza. But before we get into that, I'd like to ask you, Hassan, why do you do that work for Palestine?
Well, because I'm optimistic and I entrenched ever since I was 12 in defense of justice and peace. And I have been there since, and I really believe that a horrible injustice happened to the Palestinians suffering ethnic cleansing in 1948, and they continue to suffer the same forms, the same theme under different forms. And in the Gaza attack, as one deputy minister of Israel declared about over 2 years ago, I think, that Gaza may be subject to Holocaust, and these are his words, and we have witnessed such a term. Indeed, 1,400 people killed and more than 5,000 injured, mostly civilians. Half of them are actually women and children. So you ask me, why do I do this work? The ethnic cleansing in its most barbaric form continues, although it started in 1948, when 550 villages were wiped out in order to prevent people come back to their villages, according to the United Nations. And, of course, more than 700,000 people became refugees. And, of course, Gaza got its share in having the most heavily concentrated perimeter in the world of demographic concentration, such that it is higher than Tokyo, all filled pretty much with refugees from neighboring villages of Majdal, Asqalan, and other areas in the neighboring area. That's why I do the work, and I will continue until I die.
I guess the question would be, how can you not do the work? What inspired you to start?
Yeah, that's more accurate.
Yeah, that would be the. I think that's the question for all that we should always ask other people, not activists. Activists do the work because what else would we do? and other people watch. You opened the Palestine office in 2004, I believe, Hassan. What inspired that? How did that come about? I mean, I know the details, but our listeners certainly don't.
Well, in the final analysis, I was an activist, but I was doing it from home, from my computer, etc. And then a lot less disciplined than when you have an office with some staff, even part-time, even, you know, skeletal staff, and no staff even. You're forced to go to work, and I do now 4 or 5 times at least four days a week, on a regular basis. Well, you don't do that when you're home. You're distracted, and I used to do that after hours when I was still working full-time, and sometimes when I was going to school full-time and raising a family, I still was an activist. But, I mean, now I'm much more disciplined. I can concentrate. I can deliver more consistently. And the bottom line is that you really need to build institutions that are organized and they have a structure, a permanent structure, in order to have you attract younger people. Because tomorrow I'm going to die at some point, you know. I'm old, in my 60s, and I need to then have this kind of work be inherited by other people who are rising, who are committed, and they're much brighter than I am, and they need to carry it on. And that's why the office was opened on a volunteer basis, for people to attract people to continue the same work that we were doing from home. And I really still believe that we can institutionalize such work, and I hope that we can make it thrive even better.
Hassan, what's the general consensus? I have been a little bit removed from the last events, and obviously, you know, my personal situation. What is the general consensus? I know we've had a tremendous amount of outcry, many demonstrations. What's the general consensus of the atrocity and the ferociousness of the attack on Gaza? What are the community members saying about this?
Actually, they are not, beyond their outrage and the horror, and they expressed, of course, their frustration and opposition and vehement opposition and on many events immediately following the events on the 27th of December. On the following Tuesday, we had a human chain. We had about 4,000 people just gathered within days of the event, of the first attack on Gaza. They came to line up on Warren, and you know, just like as if instantly, the whole people came in, and the media covered that, and so on. And shortly after that, Thursday or Friday, right after that day, we had a vigil at City Hall in sub-zero weather. I'm talking about centigrade, 17-degree weather, I think. And a lot of
people. Listen, if you're out there long enough in Michigan weather, that's sub-zero to me.
Yeah.
So it's cold. Those are brutal conditions for activists to be working in.
That Friday, Saturday, we had another 2,000 people in Bloomfield Township on Orchard Lake, and, you know, 15 mile. And, you know, right after that, we went to the federal building on that Thursday. I mean, it's a continuous movement forward, with people actually expressing their opposition and relentless. And of course, they were encouraged by similar million people march in Turkey, in Istanbul, and also even in Sydney, Australia, Santiago, Chile, Caracas, Venezuela. You know, the entire world was up in arms, up in opposition to the barbaric massacre that was taking place. So you tell me the consensus moving away from this, and there are other things that actually took place besides this. We essentially occupied Detroit streets when we had this federal building march from the federal building to Central Methodist. We were supposed to march on the sidewalk. We filled the streets, and there were thousands of people. Actually, and arriving at Central Methodist, and you, Basima, you would have been proud of the unity of the people there, from all color, all background, a mosaic of culture, the whole solidarity from African Americans, from European Americans, from everybody, Chicanos, etc., etc., etc. All people stood together to oppose, actually, what was going on in the slaughter in Gaza. I mean, that's wonderful unity of the metropolitan Detroit. Beyond this, the emphasis now, you asked me about consensus, is to have us look. it's not enough to have us demonstrate. Let us go and do action. And a lot of concerted action has taken place now, where people are sending letters to their congressmen, to their senators, to Obama, to Bush before he left office. And all this has been going on, actually, nonstop. Meetings still continue. Planning meetings of that sort, you may have been receiving notices. In fact, as I speak right now, I just left a planning meeting. To that effect, this is planning more actions on the media front, on the congressional front, and boycott of Starbucks. Starbucks is supposedly a controversy, you know, people questioning whether they do support Israel. Look, Howard Schultz has been supportive of Israel all along. They have blanked it out of the website of Starbucks. And that is definitely firm that supports Israel in every which way. They have been associated with the distributing the the work, the anti-Islamic video obsession that is distributed across the country through newspapers with the Aish HaTorah, where actually they are the ones that gave Howard Schultz his Zion Peace Award. These people are entrenched in anti-Islam and nurturing Jewish identity. They are headquartered in the occupied territory in East Jerusalem, and they are the ones that gave Howard Schultz his honor. And that's why we are boycotting Starbucks. Even at the least, even if Howard Schultz is the target, fine, he has 20% shares. I want him to go bankrupt because he is that supportive of Israel. This fascist, racist state that continues to play havoc and barbarism, not only on Palestinians, but just cutting through and just going continuous to nose their, you know, thumb their nose at the international community and international laws. I mean, it's important for us to do something, and that is also on the table for action. Various other actions are being adopted, including people going to Gaza to help for reconstruction and so on. That's the movement forward in our community. Billboards are going up, one on Southfield southbound near Grand River, you know, saying, yes, America, yes, we can bring peace with justice to Palestinians. Another one on 94 on your way to the airport. These are action-oriented our community is doing, among others, and we still continue.
Well, you're doing a wonderful job. I know that, and you're right. I am constantly impressed and just astounded by the unbelievable support of our community activists, the different organizations that are presented here in the Michigan area. And it has been overwhelming. It never fails to renew my faith in humanity when I see all of the demonstrations, all of the people calling out. I'm wondering if I thought I heard the line go through. Is Congressman Ellison with us? I guess not. I guess not. I thought it was a call through. But anyway, you know, Hassan, so many of the things that you, the projects that you work on, this dedication that you have, and I know your dedication. I know the kind of person you are. And I know the kind of work that's involved. As I said, marching for hours and hours on end and standing in front of public buildings with signs in almost sub-zero temperatures is just unbelievable. You know, and we're talking about boycotting. How about divestment? You have a lot of areas that you're working on congressional outreach, obviously hoping that Congressman Ellison calls in so we can broach these kinds of subjects. What other kinds of things is the community striving to put forth?
A couple of things. Let me speak to that two questions. One, congressional in a specific way. There is H.R. 66 that's on the table now in Congress and sponsored by John Conyers and Kucinich and also John Oliver. So these people, actually there are about 60 others also signed up to it. We need to push it, but let me come back to that, and because I want to introduce also the whole question about boycott. Boycott is very, very, very important for us to boycott Israeli goods or outfits that actually support Israeli occupation. like Motorola or Caterpillar. But since we don't, all listeners are not buying Caterpillar, so bulldozers, but we can concentrate.
If you are,
on,
stop.
Yeah, if we can concentrate on actually really boycotting Motorola, because Motorola phones are being used by the Israeli army and actually facilitating the whole networking of communications by the Israeli soldiers and the Israeli army. So that's one thing that's really important for us to, you know, bring Motorola down to say, look, you have to have your social responsibility. Stop participating in the slaughter of innocent people. Likewise, Rachel Corrie was killed by a Caterpillar bulldozer in Gaza, in Rafah. And actually, that's another social responsibility question where we have taken over in their stockholders' meetings in Chicago more than once. So these things all happen to incrementally affect in order to make sure that working with Israel economically becomes like a immoral practice. That's exactly what happened with South Africa. It became a pariah state across the world. To have us boycott today, I just heard that the South African workers, dock workers, refuse to actually unload Israeli ships. This is the kind
really?
Of
and that's
yes.
fascinating. That's
this is
wonderful.
The thing that we want to put across the entire world. We want to boycott Israel economically. We want to academically and artistically. There's another, you know, group that is actually this coming Saturday at I think at the Power Center, 7:30 in Ann Arbor. They're boycotting and they are refusing to allow, you know, to people. They're asking for boycott of the Beit Shiva Israeli dance troupe that is being hosted in Ann Arbor by the University Musical Society. And I'm calling people who are listening to support that boycott, because we want to isolate Israel and its agencies from, you know, to have them become the pariah state. They can, because they have to stop occupation. They have to end the occupation. They have to allow people to be free. After all, I mean, the Holocaust words that they are bringing into the language is abominable. How to have them use the Shoah, you know, something, the Mahraqa in Arabic, is disgusting. It is something that you want to throw up. When you hear these things are used by the Israelis themselves, or by this Rabbi Yusuf, who talks about us as serpents, or children of the serpent, and also cockroaches, you know, these are things that are racist, they're abominable, and they ought to stop. And that's where apartheid fell in South Africa. I trust it will fall. This is worse than apartheid, as actually Bishop Tutu stood on Gaza and looked on the border and said, my God, this is worse than apartheid South Africa. Because in South Africa, people are not being ethnically cleansed. They were still living on their land in enclaves, in open-air prison, etc. But here, the push is to deprive us of living there. Under what conditions?
Not only to deprive them of living there, but to deprive them of the basic human elements to exist.
Listen to this. Under what laws on the planet? It is against the law to actually have you dig a well to collect the rainwater, God's water, to collect the rainwater in front of your house. It's against the law for Palestinians to do that, because water belongs not to God, that belongs to Jews of Israel only. And if you're Arab, you're out
water.
Of work. Pardon?
Zionist water. That's amazing.
Zionist
I
water,
didn't
exactly.
know that. That was the first time I've heard that one.
Exclusive rights to the entire region. That they don't want us there. That's why the wall cuts through a serpentine, through the cutting off 25% of Palestinian best land, and annexing it essentially to Israel, depriving people from their farms, from their olive trees, from orchards. And guess what? 80% of the aquifer underneath the land belongs on that side of the wall, on the Israeli side of the wall, which is not built on the international border. A stop must be put to this. It is a sham.
But Hamas
nobody knows about it.
Well, let me tell you, but Hamas is firing rockets on Israel.
Tell me that is the issue when I have been just rattling off all kinds of apartheid practices, ethnic cleansing, barbaric, massive bombardment with 1.5-ton rockets against civilians, 8-story buildings leveled, 2,400 buildings completely leveled to the ground, more than 6,000 people injured. That is, you know, in an area as small as Detroit, in 22 days. And it still continues, and all the laws are designed to make it absolutely miserable for you. You were there, Basima, as many of us, continuously miserable for people to survive. Whether it be checkpoints, why are there checkpoints, 600 of them, on Palestinian territories? Why are there settlements, there are colonies, established for Jews only? Why there are only Jewish-only roads? They cannot be traveled by Palestinians. And if you're caught, you are fined and imprisoned. Why is it that when we go and demonstrate nonviolently, we are faced with rubber bullets? Rubber bullet means rubber-coated steel bullets and live ammunition. Only 2 weeks ago, or is it last week, a journalist from Japan, a journalist from Spain, both of them were in Belain, and they were injured in a nonviolent demonstration. Why are we subject to this as if we are inhuman? Because of the kind of attitude, of racist attitude by the Israeli officials, that we are actually subhumans. We, just like Rabbi Yusuf, we are not humans.
We build tunnels and we smuggle weapons.
As if we don't have the right to live. What is it that you want me to do? Just go ahead and be slave? I refuse to be enslaved. This is my land from the time of Canaan. I am the son of Canaan. Where are you? Is it okay for us to share this land? Or is it not? Why do you insist on spitting me out? You have already spit out most of the Palestinians from the original historic Palestine. If you're looking at a map, from 7% ownership by the Yishuv, which is the Jewish name for Jewish community in 1946, before 1948 war, they only owned less than 7% of the land, even with all kind of finagling and facilitation by the British government. 7% of the land. Instead, now they control more than 70% of the land, and we are asking for establishing what, a Palestinian state, an independent state, on 24% of the land. Instead, they carve it into pieces like Swiss cheese to have it become Bantustans like South Africa model. They want us to establish a state there, cut off with checkpoints, as I said, with Jewish-only roads, with settlements across the landscape. That's the kind of state they want. And guess what? It ends up occupying less than 10% of the original historic Palestine, which we owned most of all. And we become refugees. Now we have become refugees. They want us either slaves or disappear. What choice do I have except pipe bomb rockets, handmade, and whatever means necessary for us to fight back? You don't expect me to live in slavery happily ever after. People do not live that way, and they will not.
What can we do here in the United States
educate, including congressmen, congresspeople, have no clue, some of them have no clue about these details. Or those people who do have clue, they have sold their conscience to AIPAC, to the Israeli lobby, and they are petrified to actually vote their conscience. And it is up to us, Basima, you and I, the activists, to have us continue our push, to have us go to make Israel a pariah state, not only through the boycott that I was telling you about, and finally, apartheid South Africa fell in 91, and, I mean, what a celebration under the most horrible circumstances. Reagan was still in power, and yet we succeeded to bring South African apartheid down because Randall Robinson and others, Trans-Africa movement in the United States, made a difference where it became vogue, and actually people were competing to go, public officials, Levin and others, Marianne Mahaffey, to go and get arrested in front of the South African embassy. It became an honor. I want us to move into that space. For us to
actually... wanted to be honorable to stand in defiance of the barbarism of the state of Israel.
Exactly.
We have a question here from Mike in California. And he asked, do you think Barack Obama will usher in a new age of diplomacy and resolution in regards to the Israeli-Palestine issue?
Yes, with caution. The reason I say this is that we don't have an ideologue in the White House anymore. We don't have Bush talking to God and telling him, go ahead and support Israel, even when it is wiping out Palestinians, okay? At least we don't have that. Now, Obama. Obama, at least, he's vulnerable to pressures from all sides, from different sides. The rest, I say, is up to us. We cannot count on Obama coming to toe the line and say, hey, I'm going to do what's just. Because there's a lot of pressure on him not to do what's just. And it's really up to us to ensure that he is going to do what's just. And maybe us, when I say us, it is not just the Palestinian community. It is not just the Arab community. It is the peace and justice community and people of conscience across the mosaic of cultures in the United States. Because it's in the interest, in the final analysis, it's in the interest of the United States to have us have a just solution in the area so we can have a lasting peace. Short of this, we will continue war after war and more slaughter. And guess what? Imagine the approval rating of the United States in the Islamic world dropped from something like 27%, according to the Zogby toll that I read about a while back, to now to 6%. And the single issue that was responsible for that drop when people were asked why was the Palestinian-Israeli question. Why is it that we're suffering as Americans that consequence because of this lopsided policy of support for Israel automatically? And not only with $5 billion of arms and other economic aid per year, which amounts to something like $8 and $10 million a day to Israel. Not only that, but in international circles, in the UN, every time there is any attempt by the international community to do any measly something, even in investigating commission, in comes the veto tossed in support of Israel by the United States.
Yeah.
What does that do to us across the world?
I have never
seen. And then Bush asks, why do they hate us? Why don't they hate us? This is the question.
How can they love you?
Exactly.
How can they love you? And I've never seen the veto lose such power.
72 vetoes, actually.
I mean, there was a time when a presidential veto was something that was like, it was unheard of almost. And
here, veto in the UN
made it into a comic strip. Here, veto
it
this,
is.
Veto that, veto this.
Did you know that actually...
Go ahead.
The U.S. actually cast more vetoes in the Security Council than the Soviet Union. I mean, we used to laugh, okay, that the Soviet Union cast a veto automatically about some issues. How is it that the tally, 72 vetoes by the U.S., the majority of which were in support of Israel? I mean, that's abominable.
It's disgusting. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
But the problem is...
We have another question from a listener, Hassan. Barry in Australia asked, do the people of Gaza know that there is a lot of us out here supporting them and trying to help them?
Actually, to my knowledge, there has been a conscious attempt, at least from the United States initiative, to have us contact people from Gaza through either phones or emails. In fact, I've known a friend of mine who, during the attack, she was staying up late at night, staying to nurture a relationship with this person on email online to continue his resilience and to have him continue holding on and holding on while his neighborhood was being bombed. I think to that, to some extent, the answer is yes. To what extent actually that has been really massive, I don't know.
Well, You know, I know that there are, I know for a fact that there are, I have never seen such an outcry universally around the world. Look at in Spain, over a million people. When has that ever been seen? I mean, I don't ever recall over a million people marching in demonstration against what is happening here, Hassan.
The other significant development, Basima, if you will, if I may just input this because it's really equally significant. This is the highest number of lawsuits that are being brought before the International Criminal Court against Israeli officials from European countries. This is the highest number. It is being initiated in Spain, in London, in Belgium, in Norway, in Sweden, etc., in many countries. And in fact, it is being contemplated. A bunch of lawyers actually are traveling today. They already left to go and see for themselves the violation in Gaza from the United States and bringing back to see.
Now, these lawyers, who are they representing, Hassan?
These are actually initiated by, I think, the National Lawyers Guild and actually other people who are supportive of peace with justice. And I think there are 11 of them that left already today. And I don't really know. I was not close to that development, but I just read about it yesterday. So, and I didn't pursue it. I just ran out of time. But
What of the charges of war crimes against the Israeli government? Do you think that for once someone is ever really going to pursue this to the point of taking them to
I don't know about the United States, but in fact there has been a success so far, limited success, in that some of the Israeli officials cannot travel to some European countries. In fact, I've known of I don't know the name now, of the Israeli official who was forced to stay in his airplane as he landed in Heathrow, as he was alerted that if he lands and if he gets out of the plane, he's going to be arrested in London. So he turned around and went back to Israel. I think that's great. I think we should have more and more of that, you see. To me, that's significant. So, you know, not just dismiss the importance of millions of people marching in the street in support of Palestinians and Palestinian rights. And again, the accenting the fact that the South African dock workers refused to unload the Israeli ship today, I think that's wonderful.
There's a lot of movement for the first time, but look at what cost. Unbelievable. You know, people have likened, and there's been a great hullabaloo about the fact that the Israelis are acting and committing the same crimes that the Nazis committed against them. And they've been very upset by that. But, in fact, I believe it to be worse, and I'll tell you why. During the initial periods of the Holocaust, the world didn't know that it was happening. Here, the world is watching it happen and still doing nothing.
Actually, didn't the Lord in the House of Lords, who is of Jewish extraction, his name escapes me right now, but he stood up to do to say exactly what you're saying, and how also many other Holocaust survivors are actually expressing their point of view as to how Israel is doing to Palestinians what has been done to them, to us, to Jews. And, of course, Norman Finkelstein is, Professor Finkelstein is coming to Ann Arbor on February
18th. Yes, he is. I just read that. I'm very excited. I'm hoping to make it down to see him.
He's the guy that also talked about the Holocaust industry as to how manipulated the Zionists have been deliberately to use the Holocaust in their favor and actually drum support for Israel.
And Wasn't he arrested in Israel and denied entrance?
He was denied entry because of that, because he's telling the truth. And likewise, Ilan Pape, for example, who wrote also The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine, who calls it like it is and uncovers from the archives of Israeli declassified documents, which were in Hebrew and now they're declassified, some of them at least. He writes this seminal book, The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine, and he now lives in London. I mean, it's just like it becomes ethically unbearable for some people who are with conscience to live in Israel and be participant to that kind of barbaric, ongoing racism and kind of apartheid and ethnic cleansing continuously.
What of our friends in Gaza? I know that you know, and I know a number of people that are currently going through what's happening in Gaza. I understand Mustafa Barghouti is still there. Is he able to, and since he was on 60 Minutes the other day, now for those of you that don't know, Mustafa Barghouti won 62% of the popular vote during the last election, and to be quite honest with you, he would have been my favorite. I really would have liked to see him as president of Palestine, but it didn't happen.
It's just correction. He won 23%. Otherwise, he would have. If he won 62%.
No, wait a minute. He told me this right there, Hassan. He said that he won 62% of the popular vote on the ground, but it didn't translate into the thing. But the actual voting, according to the statistics, he won 62%. That's what he said. But I agree with you. At the time, I looked at him and I said, "How could that be?" He said it was the popular vote. It wasn't. It didn't translate into the actual count. So,
I got it.
But that's what he said. And we had a great opportunity to speak that night. But really, he was a fascinating man, and he was the gentleman. For those of you that have, I know, in the internet. It's traveled around this news, that 60-minute program with Bob Simon. Just an absolutely wonderful expression of the truth. I mean, it was like being there, Hassan, when I was watching it. I mean, for the first time, they were able to they ordinarily, when they show images of the settlements, they'll show one little house, but they don't show the hills of thousands of settlements being built all over Palestine. They never show that. They never show people being corralled into the checkpoints as they are in Palestine. They show you a gate where, you know, there's a couple of Israeli soldiers. It's ordinarily what we see here. But the truth is, the truth was what we saw in the Bob Simon 60-minute video.
It's interesting also, what really struck me also, Bob Simon was interviewing with this woman settler who was unabashed about her intent and actually saying, look, God gave us this land. This belongs to us, and therefore we have to populate the Palestine and the Judea and Samaria all over. And Arabs don't belong here. And actually she was saying that unabashedly. I mean, just the racism oozes out of her mouth.
She was calling for a military coup in Israel.
Uh-huh.
That's literally what she was calling for.
Well,
it's unbelievable what's happening there.
Actually, that's why CBS 60 Minutes is being attacked by the pro-Zionist and pro-Israeli forces big time. So it's really important for people of conscience who are for free speech and for such exposure, which has been a cutting edge kind of work by Bob Simons. Congratulations and thanks to him. I already sent my thanks to CBS. I urge people to encourage this, because these are rare moments where our mainstream journalists actually go and give us a glimpse of what is true. Otherwise, these media has really not been, thanks to your radio show, it is not in the mainstream at all. I mean, this is the alternative media that we need to propel forward and support and congratulate and really appreciate and fund. Here's a plug for you guys. I mean, it's really important, because we don't have alternatives like that. I mean, look at DirecTV, for example, is the latest, is that they are refusing to air a commercial on behalf of Palestinians, is how things are. And here's a paid commercial that the DirecTV is refusing to air. It's disgusting. Again, I mean, you know, how far do you want to push Palestinians? And no wonder that actually people go nuts, and they actually end up go violent, when nonviolence has been the protocol. It has been the pattern since 1948 to LT 93, when we talk about suicide bombers, the so-called suicide bombers. There was no suicide bombers before. What happened? Nothing happens. People continue to go push us into corners and push us like rats and they call us cockroaches, and the world watches on, and nothing happens.
And the world watches. More, we have a
and
caller
And we'll
get
more money for Israel, and more support for Israel, and more vetoes for Israel. Hey,
exactly.
There's a limit.
We do have a caller online. Gary from Ohio has a question for you, Gary Brown. Gary, can you give us your question to Hassan? Whoops, he hung up. I guess we lost him. I'm sorry, Gary. If you'd like to call back, please do. We'll look forward to
you. Know, you asked
question.
Earlier about the congressional thing, and I didn't get back to it. If you want, I could go back to it. It's up to you. You're running the show, but I don't mean to interfere, but I really wanted to talk about H.R. 66, initiated by Kucinich and others. So if you want, give me an opportunity to come back to that. It'd be great. Go ahead and do the show.
Please do. Please do.
Thank you. There has been initiative after the ceasefire to try to solidify the ceasefire and allow actually humanitarian relief in, because so far the Rafah crossing has not been open by the Egyptians, and nor have been any of the other crossings by the Israelis, except in measly extent and hardly to commensurate with the disaster that actually was brought onto the Palestinians. So the H.R. 66 bill that's introduced by Kucinich and endorsed by John Conyers actually call for immediate open for the crossings to allow human and medical relief in. And we really need to actually propel that forward and support it. In fact, and people from Michigan here are writing letters saying yes to that, please vote this way, etc., but also saying, look, stop aid to Israel, and this must this apartheid condition must end, and for the U.S. to take an even-handed policy towards Palestinians and in order to bring peace and to have it really bring justice once and for all, and then no longer it's acceptable for us to ascribe all the violence of rockets, homemade bombs and pipe bombs falling on the Israeli settlements, which are colonies on land stolen from Palestinians, to justify that and say, hey, Hamas has the responsibility. This is not about Hamas. This is about Palestinian rights. This is about people who are refugees from 1948 trying to live freely. They are trying to establish a Palestinian state. They are trying to live like any other people, to have them thrive their culture, their music, their dance, their their singing and their hip-hop and so on. There is a hip-hop movement in Palestine, by the way.
Yes, there is.
Why can't we live normally is the question. Why aren't we deserving of life normally, like the kids I hear on TV actually scream and say, why can't we go to school without checkpoints? Why can't we go to school without bombs? And you hear
that.
You
know, it's very interesting. My sister-in-law's niece came to visit. She's a citizen of this country, and she's married to a Palestinian in the West Bank. And when she was here, she was driving through Chicago, and she looked around at her aunt, and she said, where are the checkpoints? This is a 7-year-old girl in the United States, and she didn't know where. She was concerned that she said, we don't have checkpoints here. And she couldn't believe it. She says, you don't? This is a 7-year-old child. This is the experience of the Palestinian people. Our children grow up believing that the whole world lives like this. It is so
because there are American checkpoints. They're American manned over there. A lot of these Israeli soldiers are American from Brooklyn, so they figure that probably America is filled with checkpoints.
Well, you know what the funniest thing I ever heard was that when I was in Palestine last, is that many of the Israelis don't speak Hebrew and they don't speak Arabic because they're from foreign countries. Either they're Ethiopia, especially more recently they've been predominantly Ethiopian, and these people don't speak either language. So here are the Arab victims, the Palestinian victims of the IDF helping to translate so they can persecute other Palestinians. I mean, I had to laugh when I heard that. I said, you know, they're so attached to their land. They don't speak any of the languages. They come here, and yet they own the land. But the people that have been here for century upon century upon century, don't have any rights to this land. I think it's just hysterical.
Amazing. Well, actually, it's painful because in Nazareth, for example, which is a predominantly Palestinian city, it gets only 24% of the government subsidies that the typical city, like Nazareth al-Leit, the upper Nazareth, gets, you know, typical Israeli city. So not only the apartheid kind of relationship prevails that way because they are Palestinians and they are non-Jews, but also, listen to this, 80% of the perimeter of Nazareth and land owned by Nazarenes, 80% has been confiscated in order to make room for more for Jews-only
settlements.
Colonies.
Yeah. Settlements.
And
you know, we have Gary from Ohio back on the line with us, Hassan.
Sure.
He's called back.
Sure.
Gary from Toledo, Ohio, so maybe we know Gary. Hi, Gary. Welcome to the show and your question for Hassan.
Hi. My
question
is, with everything we got, when I get my tax, I move down to Nashville. But I find a good job, and I'll be happy with people.
I'm sorry, Gary, could you repeat that? I don't know about Hassan, but I didn't quite get it.
I said, when I get my taxes, they move to Mansfield. Well, I'm finding a good job, and what it will be happening with me.
Your connection is really poor. Your
voice
is garbled, unfortunately.
Yeah, we've got a really bad connection, Gary. You're talking something about when he gets his taxes back?
Yeah, and then move to Nashville, but that's all I got.
In April.
Right, and then what? And then what happens?
I said, well, April will be happy with, April will be happy with me when I move to Nashville.
Well, thank you, Gary, for calling in.
All right.
You get
whatever.
All kinds.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's what happens on live radio. Thank you, Gary, for your question. You know,
did he say that he's going to move to Israel in April? Is that what he said?
I'm not sure what he said.
Or move from Israel. I forget. I mean,
I honestly could not make it out for the life of me.
In case he said that he is really saying, I'll be happy to move to Israel. Well, you know, there are actually Christian fundamentalists. The chances are that Gary is a Christian fundamentalist. And those people are more zealot than Jews who are not returning to Israel. And Israel has a crisis right now in attracting actually more immigrants. So those people are more zealot to support Israel, to bring the Messiah faster, and to bring Armageddon faster. Just one second, let me just finish this point. I'm telling you because this is very dangerous. It's actually anti-Semitic,
exactly,
anti-Jewish.
Exactly.
It's racist, anti-Jewish. Those people who actually support Israel in order to group them all in Palestine, in order for them to be slaughtered, except, and also the Muslims, of course, and the Christians of the Holy Land, of course, will be all slaughtered, except for those who will be raptured, in other words, saved by the Lord, and lifted, and Armageddon galore, killing all over the place will be happening there. Those people believe in that kind of a theology, and they are trying to rush, and that's Armageddon, and actually bring that about to the demise of Jews, demise of Muslims, demise of even the local Christians, okay, in order to have the Lord come back according to their prophecy, which is sick, and actually sick interpretation of the Bible. If Jesus came for that kind of interpretation, I'd give me away from Jesus, and yet I consider myself Christian, I consider myself a Muslim, I consider myself a Jew, because I believe in the universal principles of the dignity of you and the equality of a human being, and that's why I'm all of these people, you see. And yet, these Christian fundamentalists are exactly the opposite. They are racist, they are anti-Jewish, they are anti-Christian, and they are anti-Muslim. And if Gary is going to go there to propagate that kind of racist theology and racist ideology, well, that is the problem. When we export more of these people, whether it be from Brooklyn, who will go and form settlements, or to send billions of dollars from churches of the same sort to propel that forward and continue the conflict, that is utmostly irresponsible. And we really have to enlighten our own fellow Christians in the United States to have them stop and have them intervene. The Methodists, the Presbyterians, the Episcopals, or Catholics, all of them are actually supportive of peace and justice. Why aren't they speaking out more against this kind of a fringe that serve like really weird kind of interpretation of the Bible? I invite them to actually go to the debate and have them say, look, this is not what Christ is about and that's what Jesus is about. Absolutely not. And I need them to take their part.
You know, we have we've only got 5 minutes left, and we have another question from a listener, Hassan. I think it's very important.
Sure.
I am in the Middle East. Asks, what does the guest think about the UN backtracking on Israel's bombing the school in Gaza? And his second question is, as we speak, Israel has resumed airstrikes in Gaza, and recent comments by the Israeli defense minister, in Gaza, what's important is to kill, even if it's a three-year-old child. It does not look to me that Israel wants a two-state solution. Do you agree? And bear in mind, we only have a few minutes left, Hassan.
Okay, thank you for the alert. Israel does not want a two-state solution. If they want the two-state solution, they want an apartheid two-state solution kind of a model for us to be in enclaves like open-air prisons, just like Gaza, deprived of all kinds of means of survival. That's the kind of state that they have envisaged for us. And when they say two states, they really want us to be ethnically cleansed from that area. Bob Simon was actually quoting that woman from the settlement, is true. They want us out there ethnically cleansed, and basically that's part of the psyche of the Israelis in different degrees, admittedly. Some of them are not like that, but by the vast majority are racist, and the 68% in a poll about 2 or 3 years ago were saying, yeah, we want to transfer the Arabs out of the historic Palestine, get them out. What do they call the word transfer, which means ethnic cleansing and actually exporting all these people again, the rest of us become refugees. That's what they want. That's why, in terms of what the Israelis want, Israel want the people without the land without people. That's essentially what they want. Therefore, as long as that continues, there will be no peace.
Absolutely. You know, as you can see, this is one of the reasons I was so looking forward to you. The amount of information that you have is just astounding, and I'm really proud to know you. I'm proud to have worked with you in a number of projects, and I hope that we again will do a lot of work together. For those of you that are
my
interested
pleasure.
You're just saying that when you want to yell at me later on.
Am I lying? Indeed, my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
You're so welcome. Now, before you do leave, I know that there is, for those of you that choose to donate to the to people in Gaza and the humanitarian relief effort, the United Palestinian Appeal in Washington, D.C., that's www.helpupa.com. UPA.com. So
help
for those of you that
yep.
helpupa.com, mm-hmm. Go there, and you know the people need it. God only knows. Thank you, Hassan. Next week we will be having a wonderful guest from the Michigan area. I think an acquaintance of yours, Carol Kane, from Michigan Matters, will be our guest on the People Speak Radio next week. So I'm really looking forward to that too, especially in light of Jennifer Granholm's hallmark statements tonight in her speech. Hassan, you got to go back and watch it because she really put on some good stuff tonight.
Well,
I was impressed.
I was having occupied with a higher priority.
Yes, the priority.
I have a date with Basima.
You had a date with me. I'll go tell my husband that.
Well, yeah, that's right, Farid. Farid and I will have fun with that one.
You'll have to duke it out over me later on. Thank you very much, Hassan, for being
Thank
with
you very
us
much.
Tonight.
Have a wonderful
and say
evening.
Say hello to the family and Shireen. Good night, everybody. We'll see you all next week with Carol Kane on the People Speak Radio. Thank you.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the stable by the relief office, I saw my people and they stood there hungry and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.